Up next this hour, two, count them, two stories about smell. First, the unusual habits of a rarely seen animal. In all likelihood, you have probably never heard an animal called the star-nosed mole. It lives out of sight in mucky wetlands. It gets its name from a fleshy pink set of appendages, almost like tentacles, attached to the end of its face. If you go over to our webpage at sciencefriday.com, there's a wonderful picture of this star-nosed mole. But what's interesting about it is that, contrary to its name, the mole does not use the star for smelling. It has a more conventional nose for that task. And this week, a report in the journal Nature suggests that the mole can use that nose to smell prey underwater. Wow, we've all tried to do that. We can't do it, but this mole can do it. And joining me now to talk about how it does it is Kenneth Catania. Kenneth is Associate Professor of Biological Sciences at Vanderbilt in Nashville. He's also a genius, and Ken Catania received the prestigious MacArthur Foundation Fellowship. We know that's called the Genius Award, so he must be a certifiable genius. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Catania.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's talk about this mole. What makes this mole unique? And I know you have studied this mole.
Yeah. So, of course, the most unusual thing about it is the star on its face. And mm-hmm. that's actually kind of an interesting sort of twist in the story of looking at what this animal is doing underwater, because that is part of its sense of touch. So the star itself is an extremely sensitive touch organ. And that's actually sort of what led down this path to exploring what they're doing underwater. So we had shown previously that this organ is the basis for incredibly fast discriminatory behaviors in this animal. So it's one of the fastest animals on the planet in terms of how quickly it can identify and eat food. And I was interested in looking at how might this be different underwater. And that's when I stumbled on this very unusual sort of added behavior that while they're underwater, and they are semi-aquatic, so they live in wetlands, so they feed underwater frequently. And when I took a high-speed camera to these animals and sort of examined very close up what they were doing, I saw that they were exhaling air bubbles, and then these air bubbles would spread over objects they were exploring. And then the amazing part, which was really surprising, is they were able to suck these air bubbles back into their nostrils.
Wow, what a talent.
Yeah.
You mean, so they spread the bubbles, and they could... That must take then just because bubbles are always moving, the recognition must have to happen in just a split second.
Yeah, it's very quick, and I think the fact that the bubbles are pretty small makes it easier for them to do this. There's some really nice videos that go along with the paper on the Nature website, and it basically, the bubble sort of stays attached to the nostril and spreads out over the object and then gets pulled back in. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is a very logical general conclusion about mammals, semi-aquatic mammals or aquatic mammals, is that you can't smell underwater because you need to have an air source to carry odorants to the olfactory
right.
epithelium.
Right.
And so this was a surprising possibility here. And so I explored this by basically laying scent trails in two different directions and allowing the mole to go down for a food reward on the trail that had the scent trail. Now, the thing that complicated this was that it had to control for touch with the star. And so by laying a plexi or a stainless steel grid in between the scent trail, the animals were actually able to sort of sniff through that grid. So they'd expire an air bubble through the grid and then suck it back up, and using that behavior sort of go down the scent trail.
Wow. Wow. Talking about smell this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Ken Catania. So the bubble would go through the mesh, I'm saying, sort of, because you separated them, and then they'd suck it right back out again.
Yeah, and that basically eliminated the possibility that the touch organ, the star, was being used. And one of the things that's kind of interesting about this is, you know, having proposed that this is going on, I'm sort of showing a very weird, unusual behavior in a very weird, unusual animal. So it sort of immediately raises the question of, what does this mean more generally? Is this just a quirk of this animal, which coincidentally happens to have this star on its face, so its nose is already very unusual, or is this something that other species could do? So to test this, I was able to get several water shrews. I caught a few, and I had a few sent down from a researcher in Canada, and examine the same kind of behaviors with them, and they do the same thing. So they expire air bubbles onto objects and then suck these back up, and they also are able to follow these scent trails very accurately.
Wow. No, and not being one of these animals, I'm trying to figure out how you stop from getting water up your nose.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the behavior part is probably something that's... So one of the things about mammal smell, small mammal smell in general. So if you, for us, you know, when you think about sniffing, you think about probably inhaling multiple times, sort of
right
as you go. Well, most small mammals expire air and then re-inspire air as a normal part of their sniffing behavior on land. So what these animals are doing is basically taking that same, what you might call a sniff cycle, and bringing it underwater, so that now they're expiring these air bubbles and re-inhaling them. And the thing that's really interesting about it now is we can actually see it happen. So normally if you're studying olfaction in a mammal, you're never going to really see the sniff, of course, in air. So by doing this underwater, the whole process is now visible.
Now, when you see a dog smell, they go very fast in and out. Are they doing the same thing underwater, or is it a slower process?
Well, they underwater would not do this. So, I haven't looked at dogs, but I have looked at some other terrestrial small mammals, and for example, some other shrews. And as you might predict, if you're not adapted for life underwater at some point or semi-aquatic, that this is a behavior that you really don't have. So it looks like it's most likely going to be restricted to semi-aquatic or aquatic mammals. Though having only looked at those two, who knows what other species may be able to do this.
Is it to find food underwater, or is it a mate, or why are they doing this underwater?
It seems very much to be related to finding food. So most of the sort of the context that you see it in is when they're searching for food and foraging, and then the air bubble actually spreads over the food item. So they are sort of doing it all the time as they're swimming around, but pretty much the purpose of them entering the water in the first place is generally to forage for prey items, insect larvae, and things that they're looking to eat.
Now, if you knew where to look, could you take your little snorkel and mask and actually watch them do this underwater?
That would be pretty hard. So these guys, the star-nosed moles and the water shrews, are both pretty rare animals. They're very seldom seen. So although there's fairly large populations in wetlands in North America, I have never seen one free swimming or moving around in an environment. We collect them in little folding live animal traps to bring them into the lab and study them.
All right, stay with us. We have to take a short break. We're going to come back more and talk with Ken Catania, Associate Professor of Biological Sciences at Vanderbilt in Nashville. Take a question or two if you've got one. Don't go out looking for these. You're not going to find them. This is not something you can try at home, but who knows? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. We're talking this hour about the habits of the star-nosed mole. Yep. With my guest, Kenneth Catania, Associate Professor of Biological Sciences at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. Let's talk a little bit about the MacArthur Genius Award. What was it like getting that? Did that sort of make you feel better about this little animal that you study?
Oh, it was overwhelming. It was just a really nice and very surprising thing to get that. You know, you kind of get a phone call out of the blue where they let you know that this is going on, and so it's kind of overwhelming, but it's great. So to have the freedom to have a funding source where there's really no strings attached, and you can sort of explore new ideas.
It must validate what you're doing. I mean, you know, somebody was watching, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, you always. So I've kind of, I'm actually in neurosciences and study animal sensory systems, but I've often looked at very unusual species. And so you do sometimes wonder, is this, you know, an area that other people find interesting? Um, and And I guess that you're right, it sort of validated some of those lines of research for me.
Let's see if I can get a phone call or two. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Patrick in Toledo. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, this is Pat Conroy, and I'm a scuba diver, and I've been diving all over the world. And one of the things that I noticed when I was diving near south end of Puget Sound near Tacoma, I felt like I could smell underwater the taste near this paper processing plant. You know the distinct smell that you get from a paper processing smell? And I just wanted to ask you if you've ever noticed something like that or if it's all mixed up in my taste, and I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks.
Thanks. That's fantastic. That's the second diver that I've heard from. And it's really great to hear those stories because, of course, one of the questions is what is the physical process in sort of a chemical sense that allows this animal to smell underwater? And one thing to think about is that normal olfaction, when you inhale odorants, those odorants are being carried in air, but then they diffuse into the aqueous layer of the mucus that's covering our olfactory epithelium. So sort of normal smelling is odorants going from air and diffusing into a liquid medium in order for us to smell them. And so what I'm suggesting these animals are doing is simply having another step where the odorants are going from water to air and that then back into the aqueous medium of the olfactory layer there. And so my first example that I would use for people that sort of thought, well, this seems hard to imagine, is the same thing happens when you bring in a cup of coffee in the morning. So you have odorants in an aqueous layer of the coffee that then diffuse into the air and then into your nose and then back into the aqueous layer of your olfactory receptors there. And so apparently divers are experiencing a similar kind of thing where odorants in the water are diffusing into the air and then back in, of course, into their nasal system. And so it sort of validates the chemical side of that, which is really nice to hear about.
Well, we hear all the time that, especially if you have a cold, you can't smell anything, you can't taste anything.
Right.
And that they're intertwined. Is that true here? Is there taste buds involved in this animal?
I think that's a possibility. That's something that we've never explored, and I'm not sure how you would test that. But these animals keep surprising us with the way that they're able to adapt different senses in different ways. And so that's sort of one of the themes of this finding is that, you know, this group of animals, and it turns out these moles and shrews are not rodents, they're actually insectivores, which is a group and order of mammals, and they're often thought to be very primitive, simple animals. Mm. And yet, the more that we look at these species, the more we find that they're doing incredible and very surprising things that are sort of overturning dogma about the way that sensory systems and brains are organized. So I think there's a lesson there in that you always have to wonder how different animal senses are being adapted in different ways. So it is quite possible that they may be able to taste things as well as they move through their environments.
Well, we'll get a reference on that next study, right?
Yes, that's right.
Thanks, Ken, for taking time to talk with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Kenneth Catania, Associate Professor of Biological Sciences at Vanderbilt University in Nashville.